and welcome to the Mobility Podcast. I'm your co-host, Pete Gould, with Shared Mobility Strategies, and I'm here with my co-host...
Greg Rogers with Securing America's Future Energy, or SAFE. And I do have to note, since Greg Rodriguez is not here, views are our own.
Yes. Well, and so we are continuing to record live here at ITS America's annual conference in D.C. We've had a great time already, and we are excited. It's a big week. Right now we've got two great guests, an old friend on both of them, John Barton, who is the co-chair of ITS America's Smart Infrastructure Task Force / Fast Act Reauthorization Task Force. John, welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to have you.
Great to be here, Pete. I'm excited about the opportunity to visit with you.
Absolutely. And Ron Daniel, who is the head of Legislative Affairs, or VP of Legislative Affairs?
VP of
there
Legislative
it is.
Affairs.
The Vice President of Legislative Affairs for ITS America, who is going to obviously be playing a very important role in helping to work with Congress to one day pass a reauthorization bill that / infrastructure package that will you know, we're hoping is going to redefine kind of this next phase in infrastructure, mobility, and technology. And so, John, we're excited to have you here because we'd love to hear what is... You know, how would you frame the ITS America kind of smart infrastructure and reauthorization vision, and kind of why are we doing this?
Yeah, so as you think about the reauthorization of the FAST Act, and as the Intelligent Transportation Society of America and its members thought about this, I think the title that we gave to it is really self-explanatory. So we've labeled it Moving People, Data, and Freight Safer, Greener, Smarter. And that's really what it's about. It's about taking all these multiple modes of transportation, the new technologies that are being brought into this space, and thinking about how those can help shape infrastructure moving forward, make it safer, which is critically important to all of us. It's really at the heart and soul, first and foremost, in everything we thought about. But also, how do we capture all these innovations in new modes of mobility, new means of transportation, scooters, sharing economies, bike and ride sharing, transit, pedestrian and bicycle activities, and the traditional road surface transportation, and integrate those all with these new technologies so that people are able to move about safer. It's not about moving the vehicle, it's about moving people, but it's also about moving freight, data, and all the other things that are associated with transportation. And doing that in a way that harnesses the creativity and the value of these new technologies and does it in a way that makes the systems safer, does it greener with the electrification and other alternative fueling systems that are being developed, and does it smarter so that we get more out of our infrastructure investments, and that what we bring to the American society that is paying for this is a system that meets their needs better and in a way that's transformational for the 21st century.
That's excellent. So talk to us, what are the top priorities that ITS America and this task force are calling for in a reauthorization?
You know, as we think about what we want to see out of it, we align with a lot of the other thoughts that have already been shared. So that is creating a sustainable, reliable, and increased investment in infrastructure. People all across this country have realized we've got to do better than we've done in the past. There has to be more investment into infrastructure, and so we are supporting that. But as we think about that, and specifically these transformational technologies and these new modes of mobility that people are starting to use and want to have available to them, we also want to encourage that as that investment is made, there's greater flexibility to the cities, the states, the regions, the planning organizations to use those funds in ways that make sense, that there's more eligibility so that things that people want to do are allowed to be done under these federal programs. And then as we think about those as well, we are making sure that all modes, if you will, are thoughtfully considered so that everyone gets a chance to develop what they want for their communities and to do it in an integrated, thoughtful way so that there isn't a situation where unintended consequences of not allowing for something to happen result in something not being able to happen at all. And I'll give you one example. We all know that broadband internet's really important as part of an infrastructure solution. It's the backbone for a lot of these technologies that are smarter, that are connected, that are autonomous, that create a safer environment. And right now, cities, counties, states, planning organizations, regions are having to put in that carrier system, the conduit, to allow that in a smart way. They want to do it when they do that reconstruction or new construction so that they don't have to cut pavements in the future, that sort of thing. But they're doing it all on their own dime now. If the federal program would allow them to install those conduits, maintain those conduits, inventory them, and manage the use of those conduits, that would be a better solution. So that's just one of those approaches that we're suggesting in these policy recommendations.
Do the feds pay when they dig it up each time?
Well, they may pay for the pavement removal and replacement, but I don't think that they're currently paying for the conduit. So that's the kind of thing that we're really encouraging.
No, I was going to just say John is right. I mean, in many ways, this is the unfunded mandate. Mm-hmm. Number one, we have to build out broadband supports smart infrastructure, smart mobility, which will be key to driving the nation's economy forward. But at the same time, you have states and cities paying that cost, where from our standpoint, it should be a federal reimbursement through the reauthorization.
Well, and it also, it's not just broadband, it's whatever they can think of next.
Technology.
Which is, I think, the most important, you know, the things we know about now, as we're quickly realizing, are get replaced very quickly. And so it's not having to redig the entire interstate system or our roads.
That's exactly right, Pete. And a great example of that beyond the broadband is this growing demand or interest for mobility on demand. People want to be able to have access to different types of transportation to move themselves or their products or their data from one place to another seamlessly. So they want to be able to get on an app, if you will, ask for somebody to pick them up, take them to maybe another transport system, get on a train or a transit system or an airplane, travel to wherever they are, and then when they get off, be able to end that trip. So mobility on demand is a huge issue. It's growing interest across the country, actually around the world, and we think that that's the kind of innovative approach that should be embedded in the reauthorization program as well, so that Congress says, we support this, we want that level of mobility and access to people that are maybe visually impaired or have mobility impairments. Maybe they live in an area of the country that now has what we call is a transit desert. They just don't have access to those things. Maybe they're aging and they don't want to have to move from their home to another location just to get this, the kind of care that they need. All of these solutions are part of what intelligent transportation can do, what mobility on demand can do, and we are just wanting to elevate that understanding for Congress as they think about reauthorization.
So what can Congress specifically do sort of on mobility on demand in this next reauthorization? Are there certain programs they should be instituting, or should they be restarting the MOD sandbox, doing a second phase of that? What do those steps look like?
Well, you know, first of all, before I answer your question, Greg, and I think it's a very good question, let me just actually give some more context behind the Smart Infrastructure Task Force. John Barton led more than 40 members of ITS America, states, cities, MPOs, transit, automakers, technology companies, research universities, through a very detailed process to determine what are the transportation infrastructure needs for the 21st century. And it's exciting as far as the timing. It's timed with the introduction of automated connected vehicle technologies, big data. And again, the way we move is different now. And so our Fast Act reauthorization, as John pointed out, moving people, data, and freight safer, greener, and smarter, speak to this new way of thinking. And the way I look at it, a major reauthorization, I'm going to date myself for a second, my first major bill was Safety Lou, which was 2005. A very different way of thinking about transportation in 2005 as opposed to where we are today in 2019. Mm-hmm. And so our bill that we hope we have will be a bill that will bridge what is happening on the ground in cities and states with new forms of mobility and new types of technology with federal policy. Mm-hmm. Historically, let's just be honest at this table, federal policy has been 10, 12 years behind what is actually happening on the ground in our cities and our states. So this policy statement will actually bridge that process. Mobility on demand, your question, Greg. It is exciting. We believe that through a platform, an app, that you will be able to decide the most efficient, and we hope the most sustainable way to get to your destination. Pay through the app, whether it's use of transit or parking in a garage or getting on a scooter or a bike. And so that means developing a program that speaks to not just the urban communities in this country, but also rural towns. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the challenge here. How do you develop an MOD program that will address the needs in New York City, Manhattan, and also address the needs in a rural community across the country. Mm-hmm. And we believe MOD can do that, from connecting a rural community to the inner city rail, to the bus service, to getting medicine. There are opportunities there, but we are in the midst of working with both the House and the Senate side on developing an MOD program that addresses, again, both the rural needs and the urban needs.
Mm-hmm. And as we think about Congress, Greg, you know, you asked the question, so what are we asking for? We're asking for basically four things. One is greater flexibility so that the federal highway funding and the transit funding can be used to develop these mobility on demand solutions. That's one thing we're asking for.
And when you say flexibility, are you talking about, you know, kind of as part of the broader, you know, an STP type, all, you know, you name it, as long as it does X, Y, and Z? Or are you looking more of the, what is the ATC, MTD, which is the kind of advanced transportation, I'm not even going to try to do the rest of it, but where it's an innovation kind of pot that's got flexibility?
We're asking for both. So we're asking for eligibility under both of those to be considered to allow for these types of solutions, and then under those innovative grant programs for there to be greater flexibility there as well. We're also asking specifically for an increase in the transit program. And a big part of MOD is dependent upon a robust and healthy transit system. And so we're suggesting that Congress support increasing funding for transit solutions across the country to support mobility on demand. We also think that one of the big things is creating a common data framework so that people understand how to share this information. As we think about those mobility solutions that exist today, you may have one app in one community and a different app in another community, and they don't necessarily communicate with one another. So that, you know, that common data framework is going to be critically important for this to work across the country. And the last thing is to, as you said, Greg, create more funding for and a permanent source of funding for FTA's Mobility on Demand Sandbox. It was way oversubscribed when they brought it out. I think they had $6 million, and they had something like, you know, 100 times that worth of applications. And so we're suggesting that was a great place for these innovative ideas to be hatched and to mature. And we think that that Mobility on Demand Sandbox should be a permanent program, not something that was just done to start it.
Yeah, and I love this this idea of making sure that this isn't just a urban application for MOD. As an example, that's maybe perfectly encapsulates that whenever I fly back to my rural hometown in California, middle of nowhere between Fresno and Bakersfield, you know, I'll fly into SF, usually visit some friends, and I'll maybe take an Uber to a train station. From the train station, I'll go down to Hanford, middle of nowhere in California too, and I'll have no way to get to Tulare. Someone has to pick me up. And there's no intercity bus service, as far as I understand. There's no way to get around. And my entire time growing up out there, if you didn't have a car, you had no way to get around. Yeah. And that stopped my friends from getting to school. It stopped them from having job opportunities. It stopped them from having a lot, access to a lot of opportunities in rural areas. And there's really this need to be focusing on this. So I really appreciate that you guys are doing a lot of this work and ensuring that the future of mobility is not just urban.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And it's interesting. Pete, you asked a very good question, essentially the funding question here with Mobility on Demand. And while the program is the Advanced Transportation Congestion Management Technology Deployment Program.
He's reading that for the record, okay.
First priority in reauthorization, change the name.
Okay. At least he knows it.
Yeah. He's bluffing.
When we look at an MOD program, it is actually, it's more than that, because the ATC MTD program is a small pot of money. I think it's $60 million on an annual basis. To do what we're trying to do with MOD, we need a lot more money. And so what we're looking for is flexibility within core highway and core transit programs to make an MOD program work.
On that, you can make things eligible for the states. John, you were a state DOT guy. Does an element of accountability on the state DOT's use of these funds for, you know, whether it's on the MOD side, but I think especially on the kind of core ITS side, if you're building a thing that could be done cheaper, better, greener, safer with technology, should you be able to still do the funds the old, you know, the other way?
Yeah, so we're not calling for a dramatic change in the way funding distribution occurs or how the performance measures on the use of funds should be used to monitor the decision making and the project selection and implementation that communities and state DOTs are doing. In fact, those are good things that state DOTs have done a great job of understanding or starting to deliver. We think these technologies can help address things like congestion, even system preservation. You know, new technologies can be incorporated in the construction or rehabilitation of a lot of assets to make them much smarter, safer, and greener. And as just give one example, at HNTB, we've worked on what's known broadly as the Tappan Zee Bridge, now the Mario Cuomo Bridge. And inside that bridge, as it was built, this new bridge that has to last 100 years, arguably could last even longer, a lot of technologies were put in by the Thruway Authority. Very smart idea, great leadership on their part. But it will allow the Thruway to understand the health of the bridge as it ages over time, as it moves under different weather and loading conditions. And they'll be able to respond to things that start to appear to be maintenance issues well in advance of what they could have done without these technologies putting in place. So it's not just about understanding how the traffic's moving, how people are moving, how freight's moving. It's also understanding the condition of our assets and being able to maintain them much more effectively, to take those critical investments and make them last longer, getting greater value for American communities. And that's part of what we think is really important to do as part of this whole thing. So it's not really changing from this, you know, let's make sure that states, if they're given flexibility, are proving that they're bringing value. It's really giving them the technologies to be able to demonstrate those values more directly and to then manage that performance in a way where we all get, as the users, better performance from our system, which is what we want.
Mm-hmm. Great. I do want to dive into the greener aspect of this. When we're talking about vehicle electrification, we're seeing consumers are increasingly turning to electric vehicles. Last year, we sort of hit this mile marker of 1 million electric vehicles total been sold in the U.S. We're seeing this uptick, but one of the constant responses from consumers is they're not seeing enough charging stations. What is the role of federal government here in increasing and cataloging EV charging availability, and also are there ways to encourage more drivers to adopt EVs?
So one of the things that we have included in the platform is to encourage Congress to allow the installation of those electric vehicle charging stations and other alternative fuel charging stations along those public rights of way, or at least to use those federal funds to put them in other places if public rights of way are not available or not the correct place to put them. Mm-hmm. To your point, Greg, you know, as we see more and more electric vehicles on the roadway, they have to, if we want to get further ranges out of them, they're going to have safe and reliable and understood places where they can charge. Mm-hmm. We think that is something that the federal government should be able to enable through the reauthorization. The role of understanding where they are is probably going to fall to technology companies. As you travel and you put in a route, you know, Siri tells me where to go, whether she's right or wrong, I follow her directions without question. And so we would be able to understand where those charging stations are along our route. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing we think that is important. The example I give is we don't want to create a situation where we currently have charging stations in airports. People all, before they get on the plane, they're all hovering around those ports to plug in and charge their phones. We don't want that to be the case for people with electric vehicles, right? So we want to have enough charging stations spread throughout the system so that they can charge at home or at their office, have bi-directional charging where they're taking energy out of the grid when they need to, they're putting it back into the grid when they don't, mm-hmm. and to have the access to that. And we think the federal program through this reauthorization should it enable states and cities to do that with their federal program or federal funding.
No, John's right. In fact, before we even get to the reauthorization, I want to do a quick shout out to Senator Carper, who is the ranking member of the Senate Environment Public Works Committee. He actually introduced a bill a number of months back called the Clean Corridors Act, mm-hmm. That would provide over $300 million annually to build out electric vehicle, hydrogen, fuel cell vehicle charging infrastructure. It's critical. The future is the alternative vehicle, fuel vehicle. So number one, we support Senator Carper's bill. Number two, we want to use the reauthorization to increase funding. So that includes maintaining the eligibility under the Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Program, CMAQ. Also make sure that that program includes hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. And then, of course, if there are other opportunities, for example, the Surface Transportation Block Grant Program, make sure that a state or a city can use funding under that program for electric vehicle charging infrastructure. That makes sense as well. The future, you look at AVs, the future is electric vehicles. And so, again, we want to make sure there's funding available for that purpose.
Now, you mentioned AVs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the regulatory side, the kind of AV START Act mm-hmm. side of it. What about on the REOS side? You know, one issue that I've, in speaking to folks at DOT, and just kind of when you look at the situation, is that NHTSA as an agency was not built and staffed and hired up to be a technology assessment, you know, high tech software regulator, and especially with this kind of volume and pace of change, are we looking at from a, you know, the old school FTE style, they need more boots on the ground and people sitting in desks there to be able to help work this. Is that part of this or is that part of what we should be looking at?
First of all, let me be very clear. The regulatory side, let's talk about that first. ITS America, we support a national framework for deployment of automated vehicles that will maintain the traditional role that states and localities have with the operation of the vehicles on public roads. We also need to increase the number of exemptions. That's the regulatory side of the conversation. When we think of the FAST Act reauthorization, from our standpoint, the activities that are needed to make our roads ready for AV, we can do now with the existing program. So whether it's widening the striping of a road or digital signage, you can do all those activities right now. So we don't believe that there is a need for a standalone, highly automated vehicle program for the reauthorization. As far as NHTSA, I've heard those questions on the Hill as well. We're waiting to see what we get from Congress. At this point, we have not taken a position on, do we need a super NHTSA, for example, a NHTSA that will oversee deployment of highly automated vehicles across the country. As an association, we have not taken a position on that. But what we have taken a position on, when I get back to the regulatory side, is we cannot have a patchwork of states overseeing testing and eventual deployment of automated vehicles. We need NHTSA to do its job, and they are ready to do this job, and that is to oversee the design, construction, and performance of these vehicles, and again, maintain the state, local role over the operation of the vehicle.
Ed, that's a good question. So where do we see an opportunity for whatever, you know, AV restart will be called? Do we see that an opportunity for that prior to authorization?
Well, John, if you don't mind, I can jump on that one. I sure hope we can get it done in this Congress. I'm going to answer it like that.
Yeah.
This is a global race for the technology. And the question for us is, are we going to be buying these cars from China? Shailen Bhatt, who is the president and CEO of ITS America, spoke recently in China. And it was very clear at that meeting that they plan on dominating this market along with 5G technology. So, you know, one issue that's holding this back here in the U.S. is, again, we have a patchwork of states. And I think these states are trying to do their best, to be honest with you. They're doing the job that NHTSA should be doing. But because we don't have a federal law in place, it is a patchwork structure. So I do hope that before this Congress, I hope sooner, because, you know, we're going to get in 2020.
Any updates you want to make? Intel?
But no, bottom line is, you know, I am very happy what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that it's good conversations back and forth on the House and Senate side between the Energy and Commerce Committee leadership and the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation leadership. And I hope that we see something soon.
I want another issue we talked about kind of before we started recording, that from an ITS perspective for reauthorization and something that's really kind of at the both the front and back burner of all of these conversations is cybersecurity. What can and should Congress be doing in terms of cybersecurity, and not just autonomous vehicles, but for all of this smart connected, all of these fun, dazzling, smart infrastructure also becomes potentially vulnerable infrastructure. So do we want to touch on cybersecurity?
Absolutely. And, you know, that is an important part of our platform that we're putting forward for Congress to consider. And that, you know, as we think about these new technologies, cooperative automated transportation solutions, you know, roadside units, automated vehicles, connected technologies. One of the things that everybody talks about and certainly understands is an issue is the sensitivity to cybersecurity. And so what we're suggesting is rather than Congress being asked to try to define that and develop the strategies by which we can protect ourselves is to really just allow for the eligibility of the federal funding that comes to states and cities and regional mobility authorities and others to be able to use those funds to develop those solutions, to put those protections in place. And we don't know what the answer is. We just know that people are trying to protect their data, protect their cybersecurity systems. And right now, if they do it, they have to do it with their own dime, and that's where we're thinking Congress can make a change.
Yeah, I was going to say, so today, if you know a federally funded project has a bunch of ITS elements to it, is there any federal funding that goes into, hey, maybe we should protect this? You know, because it's funny-ish when it says zombies ahead in a roadside sign that some kid hacked. It gets a lot less funny really quickly as the technology and the intent go a different direction.
So the funding that goes into building out these systems, traffic management centers, these other solutions are there, but then once they're in place, the ongoing responsibility of putting in the software and hardware to protect it and paying cybersecurity professionals to monitor your system and to thwart attacks.
There's not a here's how you do cybersecurity and now you're cyber secure.
Correct.
It's an ongoing fight. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, no, John's right. I mean, first of all, I want to be very clear that our cybersecurity language is focused on the infrastructure, not the vehicle.
Yeah.
That's important. Also, what we are trying to do here, and I hope that we will accomplish, is that it is very clear under the reauthorization law that federal money can be used to safeguard transportation infrastructure. So it has to be spelled out in the bill under the highway program, under the transit program, that it is an eligible activity, because right now it's not. And again, as John pointed out, I mean, this is, from my standpoint, and I've been doing this for about 20 years now, and actually I was with Governor Cuomo in New York, worked on that bridge. You know, the technology is fantastic. I mean, we're building the kind of infrastructure that we need for this century. But without the cybersecurity funding to safeguard that infrastructure that is more and more connected, that's a serious concern. And so ITS America is leading that effort on the Hill. We've had very good conversations on both the House and Senate sides on this issue. And we hope to see a cybersecurity section, or at least eligibility, in the reauthorization.
Now, does that money come from the trust fund? Is that transportation money, or is that Homeland Security money?
Sure. From our standpoint at this point, number one, it's not Homeland Security money. It's a different source of funding altogether for the surface transportation reauthorization. We believe it should come out of the trust fund. It's safeguarding critical transportation infrastructure. It's just like putting concrete down on the road. So the way we have gone through this process, and it's very clear that it's a highway or a transit function, and so the money would come from the trust fund.
Okay. What else? What are you looking? What is kind of the process between now and a Rose Garden reauthorization signing the day before the FAST Act expires? Of course, because it will always be on time. What are the key steps that kind of the industry need to be taking between now and then to get that on time and under budget reauth?
So the first big step was taken today. We were able to convene the ITS America Board of Directors here at the annual meeting. They considered this proposed platform that was put forward by the task force. They voted to support it, and so now we have a platform that Ron and others that work with us across the Hill can start to talk to members of Congress about. So the first important step was taken, that we have a consensus and a vote to support the platform that we can now then use as ITS America and represent this broad audience of professionals from around the country as we're talking to members. So Ron, then the rest of the process is something that you'll be managing for ITS America.
No, well, John, today was a great day, I think. I mean, the fact is that our board approved a visionary document that, again, from my standpoint, I've spent time, I was with the U.S. Conference of Mayors, I was with Cuomo, so I have an experience in both Washington, also what's really happening on the ground. And again, this document does just that. It bridges what is happening on the ground, this exciting way of moving in cities, in small towns with federal policy. So what I will do next is we will send this document to the Hill within the next week. Because this is complicated, what we will also have with under each section is a best practice to make it hopefully easier to understand. Then it's about relationship building. We've already been sitting down with AASHTO. We have had conversations with APTA. We're going to go sit down with the mayors and the governors. In fact, the governors are here at our meeting here today talking about technology. And then it's going to the Hill. But, you know, number one, we got to figure out how we're going to pay for this. I remember Safety Lou, it wasn't about how you're going to pay for it. It was about policy. And I wish we were in that environment where it's policy first, then the pay for. But we have to figure out how we're going to pay for it. And so we're going to be part of that conversation because when that happens, this is going to move quickly. And we want to make sure that the policy that is a result of that includes the technology that John led through the organization on the task force.
Do you guys have a firm position on pay for? Or obviously then, other than we should have one that pays for it?
We should have one that pays for it. We talked about that as part of the task force and chose to remain agnostic in the way that the revenues are raised. There are obviously a lot of diverse opinions upon that, and we really just felt like, you know, that's what Congress is responsible for doing. That's what their charge is. We just wanted to ensure they understood that an increase in funding was important.
No, I mean, let me just add, because I think, you know, again, ITS America, you know, again, time here in Washington, I don't think there's another association like ITS America here in D.C., who we represent, but they are at one table as far as policy making. And so at the end of the day, when we think of the pay for, it's addressing the highway trust fund issue. It's looking at new technology, including VMT, vehicle miles travel. Mm-hmm. How can, because we have to transition.
That strikes me as just ripe with ITS and your membership and your technologies and your issues, that is right in the wheelhouse of ITS.
It is, and it's the way to go. It can address the move to electric vehicles. Quite frankly, the gas tax is just not sustainable. But, you know, we have to figure out the trust fund issue, and VMT is not ready today. So hopefully Congress and the administration can come together and figure out that pay for so that we can get this reauthorization done. Hopefully it's a six-year bill. It's time to get back to a six-year bill. And hopefully it's more money. Our infrastructure is aging. Our roads and our bridges are aging. Our transit systems are at capacity. And you know, we have to have a reauthorization that will provide states and localities the resources to build for the 21st century.
So what's the next step to getting us closer to VMT then? Do you think it's a national VMT program? Just in the ideal world, is it a national VMT pilot program? Is it putting more funds towards more states, FHWA, to do more pilot programs? What do you think is the logical next step for Congress to be taking?
Well, you know, Congress has already teed up the idea of a national VMT study, and I think that that is important because what's been done to date has been done on such a small geography. We haven't really thought about how do you syndicate this across an entire country and get rid of the concern about people living near one jurisdictional boundary and fueling in another jurisdictional boundary and that sort of thing. So I think that that is the next step. The technology, quite honestly, is probably ripe and ready to do it. There's a cultural issue that has to be addressed,
right,
and how we think about people knowing where we are and where we traveled. And maybe the questions have to be answered in this national study. Have we been too sophisticated? Do we really need to know where everybody actually was and how we divide that up, or can we do some kind of normalization of the information?
Well, is that, I know that, like, you know, when they were doing Safety Loop reauthorization and this was early talk, you know, the early Oregon pilots, and, you know, the privacy was a huge issue. Has that conversation changed a lot given the fact that there's about 57 companies monitoring my every movement within my pocket, and that, you know, basically the VMT bill that we've always envisioned that people thought would be so creepy is literally an Uber receipt that tells you where you went, the time and distance you traveled, charged you dynamically based on those locations. Has privacy on that end, if it benefits me, has that worry gone away or gotten worse as different types of privacy fights have come up?
So as I've talked to people around the country, and I'd ask Ron to share his own thoughts on it, the privacy issue may be different today, but it hasn't gone away. And there are still a lot of concerns around people having access to your information. And it's not so much that we don't want government to know where we have been or where we were the other day. It's really more about
that we don't.
if that privacy information isn't protected, what does that mean for others that could find access to that information?
Or so, the classic divorce example of can that be subpoenaed?
Yes, stuff. And so you know, is it so the privacy issue continues to persist across the country as it relates to these types of technologies and specifically the VMT issue. And as I said, you know, I think that the conversation's mature because mm-hmm. people realize that our smart devices know where we have been at all times every day. And if you want to look, you can even, on an Apple device, you can pull up a map of the country the world that shows you where you've been. So I think that people are realizing that there are private companies that have that kind of access. The question is, if it's available in the public domain, what does that mean in terms of discovery and lawsuits or criminal cases or
what else?
Or
they
whatever
can, kind
else
of NSA. Yeah. Like I said, you think about a Fitbit. That is literally, I've gone out and paid you money to track my whereabouts.
Yes.
That's fascinating. I mean,
in addition to privacy, John's right. You also have cybersecurity concerns with VMT. So my sense is until we are able to address the privacy issue, make people feel comfortable that they are being monitored, address the cybersecurity concerns, we're still a little ways off. I heard a member of Ways and Means say just the other day that they believe that we are 2 reauthorizations away. So if you think of a reauthorization being 6 years, we're about 12 years away. But we have to do a national pilot, put the resources into that, expand the existing state pilots as well, make sure they have sufficient funding, because we have to begin that transition.
12 years is a long time, particularly when we were talking about an Oregon pilot that was launched in 2000, what?
Three to five, yes.
I mean, at what point are we, it's now a 20-something year cycle where kind of the smartphone has been invented, deployed at full scale globally, and eliminated, and Congress is still trying to figure out how to charge you. Is it a technology thing or is it a?
Did I hear you?
Yeah,
you're a
you.
Technology association. We get it. Okay, but no. Again, and the feeling is we're 10 to 12 years away. In fact, even former chairman of the House Transportation Infrastructure, Schuster, his infrastructure package last summer had a transition period, which was about a decade from the gas tax. So another thing that's going to speed this along will be automated vehicles.
I was going to say, do you think automated vehicles should, if you do it now where it doesn't technically exist and you'd say those have to have a VMT on it, is that something on?
I'm not going to say that. It's already difficult enough to get a national framework in place for automated vehicles. But that said, I mean, I think that, these cars will be computers on wheels.
And plus
the whole model of the highly automated vehicle future is a very different model. At least I don't think I'm going to be going out buying an automated vehicle. It's going to be rolled out in
fleets. That's the shared.
A shared model in which I think people will be more open to that purpose. But at the end of the day, we have to maintain our infrastructure. It's fix it first. That's another key theme throughout our reauthorization document. While, yes, we're focused on technology, and we see all the benefits that technology can bring, we have to maintain our infrastructure, bring it up to a state of good repair. And while we're bringing it up to a state of good repair, load it with technology.
Thank you. All right, well, listen, this has been great. And as we get closer, we will obviously be having check-ins, and we'll be covering the reauthorization conversations as it goes forward. Have we heard anything in terms of Congress looking to have hearings on this focused, whether it's highways and transit on the House side or I guess EPW on the Senate side, looking specifically at the tech stuff going forward? Have they dug into it yet, and are they, as now that there's a proposal, is that something we're hoping to push for?
I know there is a great deal of interest. I get the enjoyment. I really do mean that. I enjoy working with committee staff, House and Senate, Democrat, Republican, because the one area that we can all, you know, come together on is technology and how technology can address many of our transportation challenges. So yeah, you know, my sense is EPW is planning to introduce a bill by the end of summer, and it's our hope that that bill will include a good deal of investment in technology.
John, where can we find you? Are you on Twitter or any other social media? Where can people, if they want to hear more of your thoughts?
Yeah, so I am on Twitter. Happy to have anybody follow me there. You know, HNTV, Senior Vice President, National DOT Market Sector Leader. Love to have you follow me. It's at AGProfJB1. So that's, I was a professor at Texas A&M, and that's where I got that Twitter handle. But I'd love to have anybody follow me there.
Absolutely. Greg,
Ron. Do a quick shout to Shailen Bhatt, yes. Our president and CEO. He's on Twitter quite a bit.
And he's on the podcast a bunch, too. Podcast, he's already a two-time.
Exactly. No, Shailen's really out there doing this. And I see him like a preacher. He's preaching the gospel of ITS technology.
That's a good staffer, right?
And so just follow us on Twitter. It's at ITS _ I guess it is, on America, yeah, something like that. I'm not a Twitter guy. I'm a, you know, so I stay off of Twitter. I'm on the hill. I don't want to say something wrong. So, yeah.
And we'll put it all in the show notes so it's easy to find. I'm at AV Greg Arm.
And I'm at Shared Mobility S.
You can find Mobility Podcast at Mobility Podcast and find our website, mobilitypodcast.com.
And we're here live from ITS America in DC, and I just want to thank you guys both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.